Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You're listening to America This Week, Christmas edition on the Catholic Channel. Here's Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
We are back, and you are listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. I'm Kerry Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we're talking with our film reviewer, John Anderson. We're talking about the power of film. We talked a little bit about film and politics on the top of the hour. And let's talk a little bit about films and Christmas. I wonder, maybe you could talk a little bit about a couple of the films that you think sort of are just the perennial Christmas classics that have sort of been accepted into the world as such.
The ones that I feel are classics?
No, let's let's start with the ones that sort of have cemented themselves into the
It's my dislike of It's American, It's a Wonderful Life, the elephant in the room here.
No, I don't think so.
Let's talk about some of them. And then we can see, you know, if, is Father Malone right? Is, you know.
Well, I'm sort of more on his side than not. I find it just a dire movie. It's a bleak, bleak portrait of American life that is redeemed in its last 5 minutes, mostly by the work of an angel.
Right.
And Capra, Frank Capra, who directed it, it's a wonderfully made movie. But as he often does, he pulls, you know, it out of the fire with some deus ex machina that would never happen.
Right.
So it's, I mean, it makes you feel good. You know, as bad as you feel for Jimmy Stewart throughout that whole movie, you feel wonderful in when they're singing Auld Lang Syne. But it's a tough trek to get to that 5 minute payoff at the end.
I couldn't agree more. And but that's an interesting point though that you raise. Did Capra intend it to be that dark and then to be kind of dragged into the light in the last 5 minutes?
I think Capra knew exactly what he was doing.
So when we say that something is Capra-esque, and people mean that it's kind of kind of light and idealistic and so forth,
Meet John Doe. He's going to throw himself off a building on Christmas Eve. Is it New Year's Eve? I think it's Christmas Eve. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It is resolved at the end in a completely unexpected change in Claude Rains' character that would never happen. So, I mean, we love it that it happens. And I think that's maybe the Capra-esque quality, is that he gives you what you really want after stringing you along for 90 minutes. You
know? Right.
Well, I think in some ways that's what people might relate to most, is that most of our lives, and I mean, not to sound particularly dire myself, are part of that struggle. We don't always have those moments where we have, you know, a vision of an angel or someone comes along at the last minute. And so you relate to that and you kind of get pulled along by that. And then what you kind of hope happens. And if it's not going to happen in real life, at least it's going to happen on film. And maybe that's what people are drawn to.
I'm sure it happens in The Interview as well.
But, you know, this is actually why I prefer A Christmas Story to It's a Wonderful Life, because A Christmas Story is, when it first came out, some people thought that it was, that some of it was kind of vulgar, right? Having this, like, the father getting a leg lamp.
Oh, the leg lamp?
And,
it's a major reward.
You know, exactly. Things like that. And, but for me, those moments at the end make sense. Those beautiful moments at the end of the film make sense because it's part of it. It's part of this, of a messy reality, right?
Sure.
The director kind of and the performers kind of pull out of that reality, a laugh about the darker parts of it and a tear about what is light about it, and so it's not so as jarring as the ending of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Jimmy Stewart is doing everything for everyone else. Peter Billingsley just wants his BB gun.
Right.
And we can relate to that,
That's right.
Well, I think that the fact that both of those movies can kind of be a part of the Christmas tradition and represent that is good in a sense, you know, that variety.
Yeah, I have to say, when growing up in New York, one of the great Christmas movie traditions was the King Kong trilogy that they used to show on TV every year. So I have this sort of, Pavlovian response to King Kong. It means Christmas to me.
Right, sure, sure.
Well, that brings up the interesting idea of, you know, before everything was available streaming or on DVR, that Christmas films, a lot of them were available once a year, one time on one channel, and if you missed it, you had to wait a year
then they
to
were
watch
events,
it again.
Right. You kind of gathered to watch.
Well, The Wizard of Oz used to be like that. Not that it's a Christmas movie, but they showed it at Easter, I think, and it's like mercifully, the Ten Commandments is only shown, I think, now at Easter.
Right.
And it lasts until July 4th, I mean.
Do you think something is lost on being able to have these films so readily available, or is it better that we get to kind of study them and be with them and whenever we want?
Well, we know them much better. It's funny, the movie that you can watch repeatedly, like A Christmas Story, which clearly people can because it's on 24 hours.
Right.
But yeah, really, there's something less precious about having the film available whenever you want it. You tend not to watch it, I think. You know, it's sort of like I've always found this phenomenon. If there's a movie on television that I have the DVD of, I'd rather watch it on TV because somehow you know you're sharing it with people.
You know, I'm the same way, and I've often wondered about why that is.
Yeah, you just know other people. It's like hearing your favorite song on the radio.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Yeah. You know other people are hearing it, and it's not just, you know, in your incubator that you're experiencing.
Right.
You know other people are hearing it.
There's some acknowledgement of, I like this song, and I'm not the only one, and someone else likes enough to play it out for everybody or for this film. Yeah, there's this element of community.
It's particularly dangerous if you're in your car driving. So you tend to accelerate when your favorite song comes on.
Exactly. Are there underappreciated Christmas films?
Well, the one, and I just watched it the other day because coincidentally it was on Turner Classic Movies, which is, you know, the greatest movie, the greatest channel on television. The Shop Around the Corner with, again, Jamie Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, and directed by Ernst Lubitsch, which is just a wonderful Christmas movie. It's set in a shop where they sell Christmas, you know, presents for people, and it's the You've Got Mail story in its original form.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the two people who are corresponding and don't know they're corresponding with each other, and they, you know. I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying there's a Capra-esque ending to it, even though it's
so now we don't know what that means, though. It might mean that it's dire.
Well, we don't know how the marriage worked out, but we know we know they're getting together at the end of the film. You know, and there's a couple of other ones that are sort of Christmassy, like Scrooged, the Bill Murray movie, which, you know, in its way is really vulgar yet sweet and redemptive at the end. And Elf, which is Die Hard takes place at Christmas.
Yes, it does, right?
I always think of that as a kind
The American
of
President takes place at Christmas. I think. Yeah.
and
Trading Places.
That's right. No, that Trading Places is a good one because Dan Aykroyd as Santa Claus is the nightmare image of Santa Claus. Yeah, and the the Alistair Sim, the 1951 Christmas Carol, which is the definitive version.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if they show it on TV now. It's I think you have to own it. It seems to be tied up in some kind of rights issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's they've been showing every version on TV except that one. And I don't know. Maybe somebody out there knows. I don't know.
And since we're here in Midtown, we should also mention Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Right. Do you also dislike that movie?
No, I like Miracle on 34th Street because I don't, unlike It's a Wonderful Life, I feel like I know what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And at the end, I don't feel like I've been
taken.
Yeah. And it's one of the great examples of product placement in the history of Hollywood. Because Macy's is right at the center of the story the entire time.
Right.
Yeah.
Not Gimbel's, not Altman's.
Right. No, that is one of my favorite Christmas movies, is Miracle on 34th Street. And part of it, I think, is my family loves it as well, so it means that we get together and we watch it together. And so through that, it becomes a really communal experience, as we were saying. You know, my dad tears up and everybody, and they put the mail on the desk and all the mail falls off, at the end. in the courthouse. There's just those moments that they stick with you. And my dad was actually watching it the other day, and he filmed the TV with his iPhone and then sent me a video clip of the Miracle on 34th Street using the video function on his iPhone. And I'm thinking of you guys.
If anybody working for the FBI is listening, do not, that's right. Not go to his home.
It was
and
only
arrest
like
him.
10 seconds.
This was not for profit activity.
Exercise, yeah.
We did not, yeah. But I mean, it was not the whole film on my iPhone, just a clip. But it's that sense of when I see this movie, it's not just a good movie. I think of you guys. I think of the people in our family, and there's something nice about that, mm-hmm. yeah. and how that relates to our Christmas traditions. Do you have Christmas viewing traditions for films that you would watch every year, John?
I would pretty much watch what comes. The ones I want to watch generally come on in the air. I don't have a huge collection. Actually, I do have a huge collection, but they're all subtitled movies. But it's funny about Miracle on 34th Street because it's a movie we know so well, we can kind of put it on and it plays as background mm-hmm. music.
Yeah.
You can come in and out of it. You know where you are at all times. You can fill in the blanks if you have to go make dinner.
Right.
It's wallpaper.
That's absolutely true. And there's something to this, to an event movie. And back in the day, as we were saying earlier, when we used to gather to watch a film together, Miracle on 34th Street was one of those films that we watched together when I was a kid. And, I remember my mother pointing out to me that this was the real Santa Claus playing Santa Claus in this movie.
Edmund
right?
Gwenn.
Yeah. Yes. and so there was something very magical about it and all the rest. And there's something to that, isn't there? It, as you said, it's not just the movie itself. What we are also experiencing again is that memory that
right.
we have
exactly.
of that event.
Right.
And it's true today. I just finished watching the first season of Boardwalk Empire. I'm that far behind. And I want to talk to somebody about it.
Yeah.
Right. And I actually wish I had watched it with somebody. Right.
Right. Want to share that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's funny because we experience things in a staggered fashion now. There are people who've never seen Modern Family in its sort of as a new show.
Right.
It's always been in reruns.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
then when you come and watch a new show, you're completely amazed that these people got old and got,
right.
kids grew up. And, it's not the same kind of communal experience that viewing used to be,
yeah, no.
in a certain sense, which is, I think, why people are drawn to things on TV, at least, like the Super Bowl and the Academy Awards.
Right.
Because it's all happening then. It's not going to be repeated. If you don't see it, you're going to be out of the conversation the next day. And
I also think it explains, in part, the appeal of the Pope in the media, because in a fragmented media world, the fact that you have this person that is speaking for and leading a billion people, right, in a 5 billion person planet, focuses our attention in this. It's an event when
sure.
the Pope does something,
sure.
and so. But that's a topic for another day.
No, but, I mean,
that was a nice
sense.
Move, though.
No, it makes sense because basically everyone is looking at him, saying this person is saying something that I believe, and when we watch a film and we're all collectively moved by it, it's sort of like the film is sort of saying to us, like, this, we all share in this emotion, we all share in the belief of what this film is saying, in a sense, when we're really moved by a film that sort of is about a social issue or, something that kind of brings us together. And it's a similar way to sort of direct ourselves mm-hmm. and to unite.
It's one of the reasons also why I was why I've been concerned in this whole controversy about the Interview movie. About what is actually going to happen to the theaters in all of this, and is it going to further depress turnout at the movie theaters, because that is still one of the places where you kind of have an event experience and you join other people to watch a film and, right. and so forth.
Unless you're texting.
Right. Unless you're texting during the movie, which is prohibited, but nonetheless.
We do not endorse it.
Right.
No, it's true. I mean, even films Okay. So actually, I wrote about this in America a couple of years ago. This film called Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, which my family continues to watch to this day on Christmas Eve, collectively, even though we are all now in our 20s and 30s, and my sister has just had a child who is actually too young to even watch the movie. So it's not age appropriate in any way, but we've been watching it for, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And they showed it at the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens last year, and I got so excited because of what we're talking about, because it's just somebody else watches this movie, because for all I know, it is watched by five people once a year in East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, and that's it. And to go there and, you know, see other people who have also been watching this movie for a long time, whether this is bad or good. And no one would put Christmas Eve on Sesame Street up there as, like, you know, a Critics' Choice Award. But you know, it brings us together again. And it's, again, that wonderful communal experience. And then to have that and then to find out that you share that can be powerful.
Yeah. I hope it's... as you were saying, I hope it, you know, the interview doesn't have any kind of deleterious effect on movie exhibition.
Right.
Because it's tough enough right now.
It is tough right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we learned in these unfortunate links from Sony Pictures is what a high stakes situation these studios and producers and actors are in. I mean, some people are making a lot of money. There are a lot of people who are making just enough, and then there's a whole lot of people who aren't making any. right? Like everything
the
else.
The writers, it probably.
Seems, right? but it's high stakes, isn't it? And, you know, and we don't want events like this news events like this to further depress an industry that is somewhat troubled at the moment.
Right.
Now, John, are we putting you on the spot if we ask you for the best film you saw this year?
No, not at all. In fact, I reviewed it for America. It's called Ida, or Ida, depending on how you pronounce it, whether you're Polish or not. And I just think it's the perfect movie, and I urge everyone to go see it.
And I urge everyone to continue to read America, and you can find John Anderson's great reviews there. And John, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.